here from Russia, we've received an email from Ivan Zeleny. Ivan says, Salam to all employees of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I first heard the radio station Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran in year 2000. I like the programs about the history of Iran, traditions, and Iranian music so much. I also like to listen to local IRIB programs on medium waves. Thank you for the excellent and informative programs. And salam to you, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course from IRIB English Radio. I sincerely thank you for this email, and I appreciate you for your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast, as you found them excellent and informative. Eternally grateful. We wish you all the best, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, and please accept our electronic QSL as verification. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Ivan Zeleny from Russia. And from Brazil, we've received an email from Reginaldo Naldi. Reginaldo says, Dear IRIB English Radio friends, warm greetings from Brazil and happy World Radio Day 2023. Thank you very much for responding to my email and being in contact with me. Iran is a country with a rich culture and beautiful traditions. I would like to receive postcard or EQSLs from your monuments and sightseeing. Thank you very much. Salam and greetings from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. And thanks a lot for this email, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil. I appreciate your thoughtfulness for reminding us about the World Radio Day. Yes, February 13th is the World Radio Day. The cool thing about the radio is that it's still relevant and important in our daily lives. It's like a great friend. It's like a neighbor, the one who is always there and never lets you down. Anyway, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil, thank you very much for sending this great email to IRIB English Radio. And please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL from IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back, and let's see what Hemant Kumar from India says. Hemant Kumar, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has written this great email saying World Radio Day is an observance day held annually on February 13th. World Radio Day is about celebrating radio. That's why we love it and why we need it today more than ever. A day to remember the unique power of radio to touch lives and bring people together across every corner of the globe. I hope IRIB English Radio makes success. Thank you and good luck. Salam, Hemant Kumar from India, and thank you very much for this email. Congratulations to you on the World Radio Day. Yes, one day radio was invented, transmitting ideas hundreds of kilometers away around the world. And by radio, the world became connected. So let's celebrate the World Radio Day and radio and the interconnectedness it brings to us. Anyway, Hemant Kumar from India, thank you again. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And please accept our electronic QSL as verification. Again from India, we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Ratan Kumar Paul. Ratan Kumar Paul says, "Dear friends, I am a regular listener of your station. Hereby, I congratulate all the listeners of IRIB English Radio on the occasion of the World Radio Day. Salam and warm greetings to you, Ratan Kumar Paul from India. Thanks a lot for this email and congratulations to you on World Radio Day. Write to us soon and please accept our electronic QSL as verification. And after a short break, I will be back with you." This is Listeners Special, and from Finland, we've received an email from Sixten Niman. Sixten is one of our old and regular listeners. Sixten says, "Dear staff, I had the great pleasure to pick up Radio Kermanshah here in Nikarleby, Finland, this evening. What a nice surprise. I am enclosing a recording with a part of your broadcast, including station identifications. I would be very glad if you would verify my reception of your station briefly. Thank you very much in advance. Best regards. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, and appreciations to you for this email, Sixten Niman from Finland. And what a nice surprise. I mean, picking up Radio Kermanshah of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting IRIB. We're very happy that the signals of Radio Kermanshah are received in Nikarleby, Finland. Such a great and long way. And that's great. As you might know, Kermanshah is one of the cities of Iran, which is located in western Iran. This city has many beautiful historical monuments. I hope once you visit this city. That's a great city. Hope you enjoyed the radio time. I mean, Radio Kermanshah. That was great. Anyway, Sixten Niman from Finland, please accept our EQSL as verification. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Anyway, thank you, Sixten Niman from Finland. We wish you all the best. Welcome back, and here we come to the end of our program. But before saying goodbye, I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Muhammad Fred from Malaysia, Ricardo Paparazzi from Italy, Jan Sornblum from Sweden, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil, also Hemant Kumar from India, Ratan Kumar Paul from India, and Sixten Niman from Finland. Dear listeners, please keep in touch with Listeners Special Program and IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of Chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode, 158th and 159th verses.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
كذبت قوم لوط المرسلين.
The people of Lot denied the messengers.
إِذْ قَالَ لَهُمْ أَخُوهُمْ لُوطٌ أَلَا تَتَّقُونَ
When their brother Lot said to them, Will you not fear Allah?
إِنِّي لَكُمْ رَسُولٌ أَمِينٌ
Indeed, I am to you a trustworthy messenger.
فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ وَأَطِيعُونَ
So fear Allah and obey me.
وَمَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهِ مِنْ أَجْرٍ إِنْ أَجْرِيَ إِلَّا عَلَىٰ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ
And I do not ask you for it any payment. My payment is only from the Lord of the worlds.
Dear listeners, let's listen to 160th up to 164th verse of this very chapter. So, the 160th verse says, كَذَّبَتْ قَوْمُ لُوطٍ الْمُرْسَلِينَ And it also continues, إِذْ قَالَ لَهُمْ أَخُوهُمْ لُوطٌ أَلَا تَتَّقُونَ إِنِّي لَكُمْ رَسُولٌ أَمِينٌ فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ وَأَطِيعُونَ And also, at the end, وَمَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهِ مِنْ أَجْرٍ إِنْ أَجْرِيَ إِلَّا عَلَىٰ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ The Lut people belied the messengers, when their brother Lut said to them, Will you not fear Allah? Verily, I am unto you a trustworthy messenger. Then be in awe of Allah and obey me. And then, like the other stories of the prophets, at the end he says, And I do not ask you any recompense for it. وَمَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهِ مِنْ أَجْرٍ My recompense is only from the Lord of the worlds. So, as you have been previously with us, we have discussed many stories, and this very surah has mentioned many stories of the previous prophets, and this is the eighth section of this chapter, in which the story of Prophet Lut and his people is being discussed. The sixth prophet, a part of whose life story and his deviated people is mentioned in this surah, is Hadrat Lut. على نبينا وآله وعليه السلام. Although he was living at the same time with Abraham, the statement of his life story has not been mentioned next to that of Abraham's. This could be for the fact that the Holy Quran is not a history book that explains the events one after another. It is something that considers the whole aspects of training, education, and improving man, which requires some other proportionalities. And here, the life story of Lut and his people is more consistent with the life stories of the prophets who were mentioned recently and right before it. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
we
approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qum.
Anyway, the first verse says, كَذَّبَتْ قَوْمُ لُوطِنِ الْمُرْسَلِينَ The Lut people belied the messengers. As it was mentioned previously and in the previous episodes, the application of the Quranic Mursaleen in the plural form is either for the unity of the call of the prophets, that rejecting one of them is counted as rejecting all of them, or in fact, they believed in none of the former prophets either. Whatever that is, the rejection of divine prophet is always the same as rejecting all the prophets. So it says, كَذَّبَتْ قَوْمُ لُوطٍ الْمُرْسَلِينَ They belied all the messengers. Then, the Holy Quran points to the call of Lut, which is in line with the quality of the call of the previous ancient prophets. It says, إِذْ قَالَ لَهُمْ أَخُوهُمْ لُوطٍ أَلَا تَتَّقُونَ When their brother Lut said to them, Will you not fear Allah? Now, the tone of his speech and his deep and extraordinarily sympathy shows that he speaks like a brother,
And then he adds, إِنِّي لَكُمْ رَسُولٌ أَمِينٌ Verily I am unto you a trustworthy messenger. So, although every nation had its own prophet whom they belied, since all the divine prophets have a single aim and program, belying one of them means belying all of them. But this is like a brother to them. He invites them to monotheism. He says, إِنِّي لَكُمْ رَسُولٌ أَمِينٌ فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ وَأَطِيعُونَ You know me. And that's why he adds, إِنِّي لَكُمْ رَسُولٌ أَمِينٌ Have you seen any treachery from me? It is the same from now on, and I will certainly observe the deposit of divine revelation. I will be conveying the message of Allah to you. So, be pious, be in awe of Allah, and obey me. You may not think that this call is a means for obtaining the worldly wealth, and I pursue a material aim, but this is not the case. It is not. I do not want you to give me the slightest wage. وَمَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهِ مِنْ أَجْرٍ إِنْ أَجْرِيَ إِلَّا عَلَى رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ My wage is only to the Lord of the worlds. I do not ask you any recompense, for my recompense is only from the Lord of the worlds. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kHz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11880 kHz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. Allah.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن می کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
February 1st, 1979. Imam Khomeini's historic speech outlining the state of affairs of the course of the revolution. You have gained victory through your exceptional efforts in unity of expression. Of course, as the first step, your victory is now in the initial stage, in as much as you have swept aside from the scene the main traitor named Muhammad Reza, although it is said that he is making frantic effort abroad. Even now that his own masters have cerned him and are not allowing him entry, he is seeking help from some of his likes in order to find a way out of his predicament. But he is thinking in vain to be able to hold the reins of power once again after this dynasty's 50 years of treachery and after 30 or so years of crimes and treason committed by these treacherous men against this country, pushing it backward. He has transformed our country's culture into a culture of colonialism.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. This is Ali, and we are trying to present some of the sayings of the late Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi, on the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi, in a saying says that the final victory is when Islam, in all dimensions, and its rulings, is being established in Iran. And the greater victory is that Islam rulings in all regions of the world. And the greater victory is that when Islamic rulings in all regions of the world is going to be implemented. Islam is the source of human happiness. We have been saying that the revolution that had happened in Iran in 1979 had three major factors. One was the leadership of Ayatollah Khomeini, that played a key role with charisma and specific characteristics of the late Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi, was very influential in the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The second was the nation themselves, the people, who backed him, who backed the leadership. But what is the turning point, what is the main factor that connects these two, is the third factor, which is the religion and beliefs of the people, Islam.
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله
صلى الله عليه
صل
يا رسول الله
يا ربنا صل
Islamic rulings were something that people raced for, and Imam rahmatullah alayhi says that the final victory is the time that, inshallah, indirectly and implicitly, he says that the time that Imam Mahdi alayhi salam comes and he's going to implement Islamic rulings over the scene of the earth, and all the humanity will benefit from Islamic rulings. And Islam by itself has come for the prosperity and happiness of the mankind. The final victory is then that Islam is going to be widespread in the world. So still we are saying and we are looking at three factors that caused the Islamic Republic to happen. That is the factors of the victory, one of which was Islam and Islamic beliefs. That Imam hopes that, inshallah, in future, when it is going to get connected to the final government of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, Islam would be widespread in the whole world, and it will show its effects and fruits to the whole mankind. We wish that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us the tawfiq to understand that time when Islamic rulings are being implemented in the whole world.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens and break it down from a Muslim perspective. On today's show, we'll analyse what might be behind the suspicious murder of an Iranian Sunni imam who was found dead after initially being kidnapped earlier this month in southeastern of the Islamic Republic. So who was Molavi Abdul Wahid Righi, and why was he killed? This next report will shed some light on this upsetting episode.
An Iranian Sunni cleric was kidnapped and murdered by unknown assailants in early December amid ongoing Western-backed anti-Iran violence across the country. Molavi Abdul Wahid Righi was the Friday prayers leader of Imam Hussein Mosque in Khash, a southeastern county in Sistan and Balochistan province. Local forces had been mobilized to find the whereabouts of the cleric, but his dead body was found not long after his disappearance on a roadside with three bullet wounds to the head. Prior to his death, Molavi Righi expressed strong support for the Islamic Republic of Iran and admitted his views earn him death threats. Iranian authorities have issued warnings against enemy plots aimed at destabilizing Sistan and Balochistan, a region home to many Sunni Muslims. Sectarianism is a tried and tested tactic used by the West to destroy Muslim countries who fail to submit to Western political hegemony. Iran may be facing the same challenge. Meanwhile, the violence has claimed the lives of dozens of people and members of security forces, while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country.
Well, joining us in the studio today are two esteemed guests. The first is Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, a UK-based Muslim scholar and lecturer who studied inside Iran for many years, and Masood Shajaray, the head of the London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me on the show today. Masood, I'm going to come straight to you on this because you may have met the martyred Maulana a few times in the past. Could you just start by telling me what your impression was of the man?
Yes, he was well known as a scholar and someone who supports the concept of unity and the Islamic Republic foundation and the leadership. He was receiving a lot of death threats and the pressures from external sources and so forth, but he really was one of those exceptional scholars, Sunni scholars, who was not only believing in it, but was extremely vocal in his support. And in reality, I think we need to understand that this is the position of overwhelming majority of Sunnis within Iran. I was in Qesh last year, and when I went around and I saw the sort of reflection of the unity, you know, there were Shia mosque, Sunni mosque, Adhan, few sort of minutes in different timing. But, you know, people, and when you talk to people, everybody wasn't seeing what the problem is. And Qishm is one of those areas where it's almost 50-50. And people were articulating to me that they intermarried. They really didn't see problem there. The problem seems to be more something is a creation of an image that is created outside by sort of individual sort of agents and those who actually want to create disunity. And we know that divide and rule is one of the things colonials have done and used as effectively over years and years.
Do you think that that's what we're seeing happening now in the south, east of the country? You think that perhaps there's some kind of attempt to divide Sunnis and Shias?
Oh, this has been going on since the beginning of the revolution. I mean, if you look at how many anti-Shia books were before the revolution, you hardly could see it. You know, there was probably one or two. When you look at the Ikhwan al-Muslimin sort of leadership, there was always Shia and Sunni sort of representation, even at that level. But what we are seeing now after the revolution, there were books after books after books being published in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, pumping this sort of idea of these are others, they're not one of us. And I remember in UK, I was running and was involved in running of a mosque. And as everybody knows, I've come from a Shia background. But the mosque was actually a Sunni mosque. And I was the vice president of it in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And we were going around trying to find Qurans from different places. And when we went and approached, Central Mosque and other places in London to get some Qurans, we couldn't find Qurans, but they were actually willing to give us tons and tons of books which are sectarian promotion. So really that was happening just very clearly, and you could see it so clearly, and that has continued since then till now and has become more sophisticated.
For sure. Sheikh Hanif, let me bring you in on this discussion, because again, you've been to Iran. You know perhaps what it's really like there behind the negative headlines which we've seen circulating around. Last episode, we discussed the fact that there are anti-Iran protests going on right now, but it seems like this assassination of a minority religious leader is something different here. What's your impression of what's going on in Iran right now?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I don't think it's different. I think, first of all, it's a natural human tendency to love each other. That's the most powerful tendency, right? People of different ethnic groups, racial groups, religious groups, and so on, living together normally, all right, they will build bridges with each other. The differences or hostility between these groups always come from the outside and always come from people who find, or communities or countries or whatever, or political interests and so forth, that find it important for you to have a division in order to control for their benefit. Okay? As Brother Mahsoud, correctly stated, before the Islamic Revolution, you would hardly find anti-Shia books in the Sunni community. Okay? After the Islamic Revolution, which is calling for the Muslims to overthrow Western imperialist domination, okay, you find a plethora of anti-Shia books in the community, and even anti-Sunni type of things also appearing in the Sunni community by those people who are partners in that project. Okay, so that project is not, it will exploit both sides. Now, when we are talking about the Mahsa Amini thing, all right, it is quite interesting that, first of all, yes, you had this anti-Shia stuff going on and a lot of infiltration into Iran and so on. But you also find it coincides with the Russia-Ukraine war, and the fact that Iran is supporting Russia, you see, in this. And if you see the increased intensity, right, for example, in places like Pakistan, making almost extortionate demands on countries in Africa and Asia and so forth, to force people to take a side on this, you see this Mahsa Amini thing started to ramp up. Mm. Okay. So I think the assassination of Shahid Rig and, you know, the Mahsa Amini thing and the Russia-Ukraine aspect, all of these things are coming together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And with respect to Iran, they're using classical, you know, I don't know if you'd call it soft power or you know, regime change by stoking what are not really divisions, but could potentially be divisions in a society. For example,
they're
divisions
looking for wiggle room, somewhere to exploit.
Yeah, you know, divisions in belief, male female type of things. You know, youth, you know, older generation things, right? Mm. All of these things are natural sort of like, you know, not really divisions, but, you know, categories in society, if one could call it that, you see?
And potential areas to exploit that. Use the economy to their benefit, that type
of
thing.
Exactly.
Yes, you know? For sure.
So I think, you know, people who are, you know, cognizant of the trends of history would be able to pick that up.
Now, Masoud, before we move on to the next segment, you've got about a minute left or so. I want to ask you, we don't actually know. I think there's been some arrests made, but they're still investigating who conducted this assassination. Could you perhaps give your opinion on who potentially could be behind it? What are the anti-Iran groups that are active at the moment?
Well, really, to pinpoint who did it at the name and the sort of so forth, it is difficult. That's security forces thing. But it's obvious that those who are threatening him, those who actually want to create this conflict, those who want to create this otherization, that separation, as the brother said, those are the ones behind it. What they seem to be concentrating on is to turn Iran to another Libya, to another Syria. And for that, any division, any conflict, is actually is picked up and amplified. And this amplification is also seen more outside, like Syria and Libya, seen more outside than inside. But also I think what is important for people inside to recognize is that the lives of everyone in Libya, in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan was shattered through this intervention and conflict creation. Of the West, and which has served no one except the weapon manufacturers and the State of Israel to have a conflict in the whole region.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your opinion so far. We are going to come back to the discussion. But first, let's take a moment to browse through some online opinions and reactions to the shocking and disturbing news of the scholar's assassination. We have a tweet coming here which says, all praise be to Allah and to Muhammad and his blessed family. May God preserve the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is from Abu Muhammad 16, who adds that His Eminence, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, and all of those who are working vigilantly to protect the Islamic Republic, Godspeed to them. We have another tweet coming in from Ashraf as well, who gives a very strong opinion. He makes a very valid point, saying that may his soul be rest in peace. It's tragic how the enemies of Islam and peace despise Muslim unity. Remember, Martin Luther King was supposedly ready to unite with Malcolm X. All of a sudden, there was an assassination attempt, a very valid point, I think, which can be used to compare perhaps what's happening here in Iran. Let's move on to Rahul now, who comes in with another strong opinion, who adds that he makes very, very clear that they should arrest all of these terrorists, do whatever they have to in order to resolve the situation. These terrorists want to turn Iran into another Libya or Syria. And finally, let's move over to an opinion coming in from JJ, again on Twitter, who says, killed by those looking to turn Shia and Sunni against one another for political gain. Just think who would gain from that. Sectarianism is a tried and tested tactic used by Western powers to divide and rule the Muslim world. That's absolutely clear. This next report touches on how and why these tactics have been successful in the past and used to weaken the Ummah so much.
Western colonialists have long sought to drive a wedge between Sunnis and Shias across the Muslim world as a means to divide and weaken the Muslims. And this is also the case in Iran, which has a large minority of Sunni Muslims living within its borders. Sunni Islam and Shia Islam are the two great Islamic orthodoxies which comprise the vast majority of the Muslim Ummah. Sunnis believe that the Prophet's companion, Abu Bakr, Umar and Uthman were his rightful successors, where Shias believe that the Prophet's son-in-law and cousin Ali should have been his heir. At first, the differences between the two Islamic strands were simply political, but they later developed some theological differences too. That said, the commonalities between the two main strands of Islam are far greater than their differences, and Sunnis and Shias have largely coexisted in harmony throughout Islamic history. Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has repeatedly emphasized the need for Islamic unity so that the Ummah can successfully revive. He has also repeatedly said that Shias must not harm the sanctities of the Sunnis. But despite this, the imperialists and Takfiris are trying to falsely claim Iran is anti-Sunni, with the ultimate goal of weakening the Islamic Republic.
Well, let's head back to our guest discussion now, and I'm going to bring in Sheikh Hanif once again. Tell me, you was in Iran for many, many years. You know what it's really like there. There seems to be this misconception pushed sometimes that Iran is like this Shia majority country, which is intolerant to its Sunni minority. And I've heard things like there are no Sunni mosques in Tehran, for example. Could you just clarify if that's the case or not?
I have traveled quite extensively in the south of Iran, where a lot of the Sunni population is concentrated. I've also been to Kurdistan, which is quite majority Sunni. And I see on the community level, there's no hostility, there's intermarriage. You know, Sunnis have their own masajid. You know, Shias could come in there and pray. They have their own madrasas, okay, that are independent, you know. And you don't see on the social level any kind of tension, you know. I wouldn't doubt that you would have probably elements that might be sectarian. I think this is something that occurs in religious communities by and large. You know, there might be people who might have these types of tendencies, but you don't. When I was there, they were not dominant as an idea in the community. So I really don't see a problem. You know, the same was like in Iraq, for example. In Iraq, you know, you had Sunnis and Shias getting married and so on. As soon as the Americans want to take over the oil and so forth, then you find a propagation of anti-Sunni, anti-Shia stuff going on in Iraq. Mm-hmm. You know, people who were married, you know, families were broken up and so on. And I think, you know, basically when you find these types of phenomena, you have to ask the question, who has the most to benefit from this? You know, I will always, always go back to basically Western and American interests.
And Masood, I want to ask you again, you know Iran very, very well. Do you think that Iran is perhaps vulnerable to the same type of sectarianism push from the West as, say, other countries in the region have been, like Iraq, for example?
When I went to Peshawar last year, even I was surprised the level of the unity on the grassroots. I mean, you know, talking to the taxi driver, talking to people around the city, you know, I was so conscious to find out what is really going on that level, because, you know, any other level could be manipulated. And people genuinely were saying, we don't have a problem. There are efforts to create these problems, but we are united. We are so sort of almost together, you know, bonded together. But there are elements, you know. I mean, look, in Iraq, what happened, I remember two British soldiers dressed up in Arab clothes were arrested, armed to the teeth with bombs, and they were arrested. What do you think they were doing? You know, if you go to one community and dressed up as that community and bomb the other side, and then next day go to the other community and bomb the opposite side, even if there are people two sides of same street and have no other difference other than that, they start fighting each other because they see people from that side of the street that are attacking this side and from this side to that side. So it's easy to create that. And I've been involved. We have a program called Charter 3103, which is from the verses of Quran, At-tasmu bihamdullahi jami'an. We go for conflict resolution. We have done these settings in Pakistan, in Indonesia, in Malaysia, and it's been extremely successful, bringing people from the Salafi background, from Sufi background, from Shia background. And when you put people together over a few days, praying together, eating together, joking together, and so forth, you see the bonding. And, you know, people going through that process usually come back and they say, look, before we used to go to TV studios and we used to really go for each other. Now, we're ashamed of doing that. Mm. We actually cannot go for each other that way because on the level of heart being brought together. And I think the verse is actually deals with that. It's not a political unity. Allah says, unite. And you remember the times that you were separate from one another, then I brought your hearts together. Mm-hmm. So we need to unite on the level of heart, on the level of, you know, brotherhood and so forth. And I think the other really important thing is that the creative illusion, and I've seen it. I was giving a talk once, and a brother from a Salafi background got up. He said, what you're saying about unity is fantastic, but it's impossible. Mm. I told him that, well, look, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala orders us to unite. Do you think Allah is joking with us? They're asking us to do something which is impossible? Mm. The impossibility is being put in our brain. It's not the reality.
Wow.
It is possible, and we need to work on it, and we need to get rid of these illusions that the enemy is creating to divide us.
That's a very strong story to end your point on. I'm going to come back to you, Sheikh, on this and ask you about this concept of Islamic unity. I think right now we do live in an age where there does seem to be a divide between Muslim communities on many issues. Sectarianism to a degree perhaps has been partly successful. But do you think that this concept of Islamic unity is possible? And if so, how can we get there?
I don't think it's possible. I think it's natural. It's not just possible, it's natural. I mean, when you look at the history of Islam, okay, you never found a situation. Very rarely would you find a situation where people are forced to convert to Islam, you know, in contradiction to Western propaganda. Okay, in fact, what you would find that in the Christian countries, okay, you had more intolerance, okay, than in Muslim countries for other religions, not to mention other Muslim sects or points of view, okay? So when you look at, for example, classical Spain and Al-Andalus, which was an Islamic country, a 100% Islamic country that was close to 800 years, for 800 years. When you look at the golden age in Iraq, you know, you find a confluence of different thought, Christian philosophy, Buddhist philosophy, you know, Pahlavi philosophy and the sciences and so forth. Everybody was free. You found that some of the greatest advances in traditional Jewish thought was under Maimonides, you know, who was living in Islamic Spain and had that freedom to do this.
Yes, that's
okay?
Right.
Okay? Yeah. All right? So when you could have that type of unity with other religions and cultures, you know, what about between Muslims? You see? When you look at the Christian world, however, you know, you have things like the 100-year war, you know, between Christians. You know, you had Christians slaughtering each other.
The Dark Ages, I think, were during the Islamic
Golden
Age, wasn't it?
You know, when they retook Andalus, You know, you had blood flowing in the streets from Jews and Christians. When the Jews were fleeing this persecution, where did they go? Did they go north to Germany? No, man, they went south to Morocco, because the new Muslims would be tolerant towards them. This whole new idea of Muslim intolerance and so forth is actually fomented by these puppets of the West. Saudi Arabia, for example. You know, elements within these countries and so forth. So I think we have to be able to be cognizant of history to be able to understand these things.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Unfortunately, we are out of time. There's so much more we could have discussed, but we'll have to leave it there for the time being. And thank you to everyone at home for joining us for this edition of Eye on Islam. But for now, it's Assalamu Alaikum.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very interesting question. And that question is about, it's a practical question. The question is about what should we do when we encounter a matter that is obscure or doubtful, right? Something that we're not sure about. Right. Obviously, this is something, an obscure matter, something we're not sure about. This can be very dangerous. Regarding the danger of this matter, Imam Ali said, "Be on your guard against the obscure matter, for verily it has been set down in order to test people or lead people astray." Right. In this regards, fortunately, we have many hadiths which allude to what we should do when we encounter a matter that we're not sure about. Imam Bakr alayhi salam said, "Stopping in the face of an obscure matter is better than plunging headlong into a disaster." You want to invest your money, you know, with a certain person, right? He's claiming that, you know, he's very good in business, and you know, he just needs some capital. He's asking you to invest money with him, and he promises you that, you know, he will give you a lot of profit, or not promises you, that would be usury. But he says that, you know, he's pretty sure that, you know, it will be successful in this, but you're kind of doubtful. What should you do? It's best thing to do, instead of falling into a disaster, the best thing to do is to just stop and avoid it. Similarly, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "The most pious of people who stops in the face of an obscure matter, it might not be something related to the world, worldly affairs. It could be something with regards to religion, right? Let's say that you want to do something good, right? But you're not sure about its, you know, whether it's really permissible or not. The best thing to do is stop until you're sure about it. The Prophet said, "Leave that which fills you with doubts for that which does not. Leave that which fills you with doubts for that which does not. For the one who grazes his animals around the protected area risks entering it." Like, say that you want to buy a house, right, and in a certain neighborhood, but you're not, there's two houses available. One of the neighborhoods is, you're pretty sure it's pretty safe. Another area is kind of wealthy, but you're not sure the people there, how they are, you know, and you're kind of scared, if I move there, are the kids there, are they going to have a bad effect on my kids? You know, how is it going to affect their character and behavior, right? So what should you do in this situation? You should abandon, you know, moving to that place which you're kind of not sure about, that you feel doubtful about. You don't know the effects that it would have. Maybe you are sure that, you know, by moving to a certain country, you know, economically you might become more prosperous, but you're not sure about the effect that it would have on your kid's faith or your own faith, right? What should you do? Avoid moving there. You should at least stay in a place where, you know, you are at least more sure that, you know, your faith would be secure there and the faith of your family and your children would be secure there. The Prophet also said, the lawful is evidently clear. The lawful is evidently clear and the unlawful is evidently clear. And obscurities fall between these two. He who abandons these obscurities is saved from the prohibited thing.